C1P. Number 13A.
We start today with part 4, which Mrs. Eddy entitles Mental Treatment Illustrated. So before we take the text, we just want to have a quick survey of what Mrs. Eddy presents here in the first, in the fourth part. We have called that fourth part How the Healing Process Takes Place, how therefore the patient reacts on the practitioner's treatment, therefore gives some kind of a relationship, a spiritual relationship, what's going on between the mind of the practitioner and the mind of the patient, which is the divine mind. Therefore, what Mrs. Eddy wants to present here is that what we have been considering in the first three parts as the practitioner's state of consciousness, that is now reflected in the case. So the main point is reflection, and we know that we can express reflection through the synonymous term spirit, because in spirit we have pure reflection. There is no more any extraneous element entering in, and so there is no more any deflection possible. And so we find here that's what the practitioner holds in consciousness, has its reflection in the patient. As we have seen, the first three parts have that great tone of love, truth, and life. We see now here that therefore Mrs. Eddy will build up the subject by showing that love, truth, and life are reflected. Therefore, give a sense of love, truth, and life always at the point of spirit, reflection, bringing therefore forth full reflection. She will present it in this order, which is quite an interesting order, because Mrs. Eddy never uses that combination of love, truth, life in this order nowhere in the textbook except here in this chapter. Just when we finished that chapter this morning, on the love as love, we had that statement that this is life eternal, namely the knowledge of love, truth, and life. That's how she ended it. So in order to show that the patient is not diseased and is not really unfolding towards death, but is unfolding towards life, eternal, we can see that he must reflect the perfection of love, the facts of truth, so that he has the isness, the beingness of life. This is the order in which Mrs. Eddy presents now this fourth part. First shows love and spirit. Perhaps you turn quickly to page 10 of your illustrative material, where you see on the last column on the top, love, truth, and life, and spirit as the healing process. Then in italics, you have love and spirit, which covers really the tone of mind based on the mind science, and covers also the tone of spirit as that which creates order. Then you see when we turn from spirit to soul, we see then truth and spirit. You have that in italics. And that truth and spirit tells us about Christ's power, namely translating takes place in the patient, so that at the point of soul and at the point of principle reaching every part of the system, of the human system, bringing forth in life renewal of life. Then, interestingly enough, in the middle of that life tone, there is the break to the last block of life and spirit. There you have, in italics, bringing out at the point of life eternal life, then at the point of truth perfect health, and at the point of love the solution for every problem. Now, as we go on, we will see that this is a very natural process and that we will understand it in a very easy way. Just only on its first sight, it looks a bit complex, but we will see that it isn't at all complex. Because it will show first at the point of love and of love in its reflection as spirit, that what she presents here is the state of perfection. Love, perfection, reflected as a state of perfection. If we have truth and spirit afterwards, we know that truth is the Christ power at work. Therefore, the Christ power at work at the point of spirit is the transforming power of truth. Therefore, it will show that through soul everything is reformed and translated, reaching, in order to do that translation, every part of the human body, every part of the system, principle, bringing about in this transforming office something new. So at the point of life you have the newness of life. Therefore in here, in that second block of truth and spirit, we get really the transforming sense, the healing process takes now place through soul, principle life, so that when that transforming process has taken place, you have then the outcome of it as real health, namely as the health, as the healing. And so she shows in life and spirit that being is now fully reflected, that being is now no more deflected and tends towards sickness and death, but is reflected and therefore shows forth at the point of life really the eternality of life, showing that actually the patient was never sick. At the point of truth, that we can never find any disease. Disease was not there, she says. So as to bring out in love that in this process lies the solution to every problem. Well, this is just a preview, and as we go on, we will feel that this is a very natural order. It is also quite interesting to see that when she speaks about disease here in that mental treatment illustrated, that she will speak about disease differently than she has been doing in the first three parts. Actually, in the first part she doesn't speak about it, but in the second and third part there she would always speak about disease and say, well, where does it come from? I have to reduce it to what? To mortal mind, and so on. Whereas in that last part now, where she shows that actually we cannot heal anything because sickness does not exist, so we cannot heal anything. It's just a question that we have enough insight that sickness does not exist. You have these three very great statements then in this fourth part, namely in the first block, if I can call that block, that love and spirit, that she would show that disease has no cause, She doesn't reduce it to a cause and say that causes mortal mind, that she says there is no cause for disease, because the only cause there is anyway the divine mind, so disease could not even have been caused, and therefore is neither cause nor effect. In the second block there of Truth and Spirit, she will say, well, disease there is no disease. There is no disease. So she deals with disease as not existing. And in the third block of Love and Spirit, she will say that with that consciousness of life which we have, we will never find disease. Disease is never there. So you can see that this fourth part, is really tackling the whole question of healing a bit from a different aspect, namely always from the aspect that the reality of being, love, truth and life, is always at the point of full reflection. And that is really the standpoint from which we can consider now this fourth part. Also, she makes a very interesting statement right at the beginning of the fourth part, which seems to indicate those three great blocks, namely that she says that the procuring cause and foundation of all sickness is fear, ignorance, and sin. Fear, ignorance, and sin. And actually then, in that first block of love and spirit, she shows how to handle fear. Then in the second block of truth and spirit, she shows how to handle ignorance. And in the last block, life as spirit, she shows how to handle then sin as the cause of disease. So if we have this overall view on that fourth part, I think we can start and tackle the text as it is presented in the textbook. We start, therefore, so to say, with that first block, namely love and spirit. Love reflected at the point of full reflection, therefore love's full reflection, which has no sense of fear. We have said here she handles the belief of fear as the cause of disease. In order to present this first block, she presents that love, full reflection, from the point of view of mind first, and then of spirit. So we take the first one, love's full reflection from the point of view of mind, and my epitome here reads like this, that love's reflection fulfills itself through mental and spiritual science. So here you have mind, namely through mind science, through mental science, and actually mind science. So this is the point she picks up. So that she says, how is the process of healing taking place in order to bring out the full reflection of perfection? And she says, it is done through the means of mental and spiritual science. And she gives two kinds of treatment, or possibilities of treatments. But first of all, let us see the tone of love in it, in order to see what is the starting point. And here we will find always more or less the same tone, that love goes out from the point of view not to be afraid, to handle fear. You see, she actually has ended the third part on page 410. She ended it at line 18, saying, there is no fear in love, but perfect love casts out fear. He that feareth is not made perfect in love. So that was the bridge over. Now she has to explain that statement. How we should not have fear, why there is no necessity of fear. So now she explains the healing process from the standpoint of being freed from fear. The very first point that she brings out here, you see, is on line 29, on page 410, that she says, Christian scientific practice begins really with Christ's keynote of harmony, namely, be not afraid. Be not afraid. And this goes right through that first tone of love. It's all about of wholly removing fear first, of allaying the fear, to see that we are exempt from danger. That's also a kind of being free from fear. And that if we are free from fear, then we have a state of love, and that, she says, is bringing instantaneous healing, because this is really the ultimatum. Because, quoting Job, she says, the things which I have greatly feared is come upon me. So let's start, she says, with that Christ keynote, be not afraid. She says later on, always begin your treatment by allaying the fear of the patient. So here we have a sense that love must be reflected in the patient, namely that we ally the fear within us and in the patient. It is interesting that she says, always begin your treatment by allaying the fear of the patient. As if she would say that fear is really the procuring cause of all disease. It's that fear, it must not be a conscious fear. It must not be always a fear where we have heartbeats and where our knees tremble. It can just be that latent fear, that even unconscious fear, that in the future something may not go right. That fear of the incertitude of life. And therefore, we have all these insurances, because if we would not have fear, nobody really would really go into an insurance. Life insurance, sickness insurance against sickness and fire and storm and hail and water and so on, and robbing on things and that and the other, until you have about 2 dozen different insurances. If we would have a certain sense that everything unfolds according to the plan of love, we would not have that latent incertitude of a lurking danger that is innate in the human erroneous consciousness, and this is actually what has to be corrected. So she says, if you succeed in wholly removing the fear, your patient is healed, because God lovingly governs all. You have a sense here of mind, that in the allness of mind, love governs everything harmoniously. So we can see that what she demands here is really a very high altitude of consciousness, which would say, I have no fear of the future. I never dread that God will not be fully exemplified at every moment, at every time, in every situation. Because the inner meaning of love, as you know, is that love is never without its objectification, that love is never without its manifestation, that love is always so one with its manifestation that there is never any doubt that that principle could not be operative in every case through time and through space. It is a consciousness that we have to culture within ourselves, because from education and from the traditional beliefs, we are really molded into a very different state, into a very different consciousness, that consciousness that which has always a question mark for the future. Now showing how we can allay that fear and how we can reach that patient so as to free him from fear, she now uses the means of mental and spiritual science. The question is now, what is really that communication between the practitioner and the patient? Where do they meet? On what level do they meet? What is their channel of meeting? How can they be really on the same, if I may call it, wavelength, so that they understand each other, that they reach each other? And her method that she presents here is twofold. The one is what I call the mental way, namely through argumentation. The other is the way of science, that way that goes out from the divine mind. Argumentation does not go out from the divine mind. Argumentation goes out from our thinking, that we argue a case for the good. And therefore it is a thought process, and whereas a true communication in science should never be a thought process, never be argumentation, should always be the one mind. Why? Because we can see there is God is mind, and God is the only mind. Therefore, the patient and the practitioner can have actually no other mind but that mind which is God. And on this basis they can unite. On this basis they can understand each other, because it's still the one mind. But it is necessary to really analyze those two kinds of mental science. Therefore, I would like to read a few passages really from the textbook in order to bring out really those two methods, because one sees always that actually most students of Christian Science never make a distinction between those two methods, the method of healing through arguments and the method of healing through the science of mind. They always think it is one and the same thing. So I read 411, line 3, that paragraph. My first discovery in the student's practice was this. If the student silently called the disease by name when he argued against it, so you have here the method of argumentation, that is, calling the disease by name. You see, you do that. Not God does that, we do that. As a general rule, the body would respond more quickly, just as a person replies more readily when his name is spoken. But this was because, and now she gives the reason, because the student was not perfectly attuned to divine science. So she says, you see, you can use the method of argumentation then, when you are not attuned with divine science, when you are not treating your patient through science, and needed the argument of truth, small t, for reminders. And you can see again, it is only the human mind that needs reminders. In divine science, the divine mind does not need any reminders. So she presents now the method of science and says, if spirit, capital S, or the power of divine love bear witness to the truth. See, here you have again the truth, it's multi, bear witness to specific facts. This is the ultimatum. This is the ultimatum, love. The scientific way, it's now the scientific way. It's now a scientific treatment. It's no more a mental treatment, a treatment by argument. And the healing is instantaneous. So this paragraph must be seen that she wants to present first those two different kinds of mental treatment. The one is the treatment through mentality, namely, therefore, argumentation. The other is to treat through the synonymous terms, through science. We can perhaps turn to the next page again and see what she says there. 412, I read from line 4. Here again, she gives first the method of argumentation. Mentally and silently plead the case scientifically for truth. See, mentally and silently plead. God doesn't plead. Mind, divine mind doesn't plead. You may vary the arguments to meet the peculiar or general symptoms of the case you treat, but be thoroughly persuaded in your own mind, can you see, in your own mind, concerning the truth which you think or speak. Again, very definitely the method of argumentation, and you will be the victor. So she said, yes, you can heal through the method of arguments, but really the scientific way, she says, is if you deal from the point of view of science, at least from the point of view of the synonymous term. I read on, you may call the disease by name when you mentally deny it. You see, mentally deny it. We are using our thoughts. But by naming it audibly, you are liable under some circumstances to impress it upon the thought. She says, can you see? She even says there is some danger in that method. You can make out of evil more instead of less. The more you argue against evil, you can really make something of evil.